might be you might want me to explain them more. So just feel free to ask. And there's a lot of questions.
Do they have any sort of logic, like?
I hope so.
Can you prepare us? Can you just give some idea of the overall?
Sure, we could run through the questions first and then go through them.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Misogynist music.
Censorship of the media is one of those emotionally charged topics that most people deal with, largely speaking, by burying their heads in the sand, unless they have a particular interest. But if you watched TV yesterday, or if you read the paper today, or if you're listening right now, I've got news for you. It is of interest to you too, if you consume any of the media, video, film, print, radio. And to speak with us more on the topic of censorship, we have in the studio Sarah Diamond, a local video artist, teacher at Emily Carr, and chairperson and one of the organizers of CRTV, otherwise known as the Coalition for the Right to View. Good evening, Sarah.
Good evening.
What exactly is the CRTV?
The CRTV is a coalition of artists' organizations, individual artists, of women from the feminist community, of gays and lesbians, of a number of lawyers, of people concerned with the issue of our right to view and criticize material in whatever format.
The first thing that strikes me is that many of the members of it, in the list that you just stated, would be what is fondly and I think often erroneously described as minority interest groups?
One could say that, although I think that we've begun to bring into the coalition people who, for example, are academics and some of the major teaching institutions who are very concerned with developing critical alternatives to pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also, I think, gotten a fair amount of support from the public when we go out and we speak places, when we're on the media ourselves, when we're on radio phone-in shows, for example. A lot of people, surprisingly enough, and it's not just men,
mm-hmm.
don't want to see pornography censored. They're concerned with the general issue of censorship and what that will mean.
Is pornography the thrust of your fight here?
Well, it's not really the thrust of our fight. What we're concerned about is the Attorney General's proposal in BC to bring in, to extend the powers of the existing Film Classifications Board to include video.
Mm-hmm.
And they're defining its power in terms of video as the right to both censor particular kinds of images and also to classify. So we are concerned with the extension into video, and although they say they're targeting pornography, we feel that they will, in fact, target all video materials.
What types of images is the Attorney General aiming at?
Well, they have four categories that they find offensive and that they feel should not be distributed in British Columbia. Those are unnatural acts, which, if you look at the history of what that means, that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty over time.
Mm-hmm.
Another is any images of youth sexuality or youth adult sexuality. So that means that any imagery that deals with young people's sexuality, potentially sex education material, would be censored.
Young meaning children now?
Youth. That is, you know, anyone who is 18 and under.
Okay.
We're talking about the existing age of consent laws in Canada.
Okay.
The third category would be something called sex associated with coercion. And we assume that means violent pornography to some extent. But again, there's a big problem there, because if you look at some of the work that even feminist artists are doing to try and criticize the existing images that we are bombarded with, a lot of it reverses imagery or includes imagery in order to critique it.
Mm-hmm.
Will that material be banned, as it has been in Ontario and other places in Canada? And the fourth act is torture and dismemberment. Again, something that people might say, well, that's really straightforward. But it's not,
mm-hmm.
because, again, in Ontario, work coming in from Central America that deals with the repression there is being stopped, you know, from being shown in Ontario because it has graphic depictions of torture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, potentially, again, that's something that one might want to use in a critical film or video, and in fact has been used in order to make a social statement.
But the problem arises here, does it not, that whilst the artist may say, well, I'm using these graphic images because it is a critical statement used in an aesthetically appropriate manner and perhaps a socially relevant and politically relevant manner, who's to say, is it not all very subjective?
Right, that's right. It's very difficult to, in fact, create criteria for what is pornographic and what is erotic. And, you know, feminists have spent perhaps 10 years debating that issue. We recently held a conference here called The Heat Is On, Women on Art on Sex, and we showed a number of videotapes and images, comprehensive series of images, and believe me, there was no consensus in that audience, and there were many, many women there, as well as some men, about what was offensive or non-offensive, critical, affected them emotionally, and so on. I guess what we're trying to say is that the way to deal with pornography is not to censor it. It's to recognize it as an important element of the images in our society, to teach people to criticize it, to analyze media images when they're young, and to provide alternate images of sexuality.
That's interesting. You said that you're not out to have pornography censored. Isn't that rather at odds with the stance of some feminist groups and some censorship groups?
Right. Well, I think one thing very much in favor of the coalition is that it's taken essentially a pro-feminist position on the kind of alternatives we'd like to see. This is one question where feminists are very much divided amongst ourselves. There are many feminists who, unfortunately, I think have fought for censorship, in fact, for the law that's coming in British Columbia. There's both a very strong right-wing lobby and a strong feminist lobby. There's also feminists who have alternate legislation they'd like to propose around censorship, and there's many of us who are very, very much opposed to censorship. For one thing, some of the work that has been censored and has become, you know, the sort of material of court cases in Ontario has been strong feminist work. So what are we to conclude?
There's a great irony here, is that two socially and politically polarized groups are fighting for the same thing, for their own reasons.
Well, you know, I'm always suspicious when the BC Attorney General is willing to act on a very strong demand of at least one segment of the feminist community, given the rest of the record on women's issues in the province.
And so it's selective.
Right, it's selective, and I think one of our concerns is that this will be done and told to women that, you know, we have basically met the issue of violence against women by bringing in this legislation when transition houses are being closed all over the province and the services that deal with actual sexual abuse, particularly of children, no longer exist.
I mentioned in the intro the question of people taking an interest. Is it a problem that you faced in that most media consumers aren't confronted daily with this? They watch their TV, they listen to their radio, they read their paper, and everything's fine and dandy, thank you very much. Is it a problem that you're conscious of?
Yes, I think that when people think of censorship, they think of, oh, you know, a kind of extreme of images. Well, violent pornography will go, perhaps. And not of the images that they see. In fact, there is already censorship in place in British Columbia. There's classification of film, and, you know, not always the right decisions are made in that situation.
Is some, or perhaps even most of it, not good and for the benefit of society? Like, should 9-year-olds be allowed to go see Carnal Knowledge or something like that?
Well, I guess what our stance is that we believe that there needs to be a fairly total restructuring of sexuality within the culture as it exists, and that one of the big gaps for young people is available information on sexuality. And, you know, the province doesn't support sex education in the schools. It's a disaster. I mean, there's a tremendous number of teenage pregnancies, and that's not about sexuality. That's about information about birth control, you know? And I guess my personal opinion, and I must say the coalition doesn't have a position on child pornography, but my personal opinion is that I would like to see kids have access to explicit images of sex. Mm-hmm. And that includes, I suppose, pornography right now, but it certainly includes, for me, alternate graphic materials. I think children consume pornography. Teenagers consume pornography. There was a recent study at York University that showed that they're the major consumers of pornography in Canada. That says so much to me about the absence of other kinds of material and information for young people.
But there's the classic contention that if you do that, then they will become monsters.
Well, I think sexuality in this culture is already fairly monstrous. I think there's a lot of education that we do receive in our families and in the culture that equates sex and violence and, you know, incredible inequality and so on.
Yes, I think that is a fair comment. Perhaps half of us are monsters because it's censored, because it's not available. Who up till now has been doing the censoring? Who up till now in BC has been saying, okay, this is an R, and in this particular movie, they have to cut out this clip. Who is it? Who decides?
It's the Film Classifications Branch, and it covers film right now.
Is that a provincial body?
It's a provincial body. Now, there's other forms of censorship in place, and it's always worth mentioning them. One is Canada Customs, which has been very, very active at the BC border, seizing materials, particularly headed towards Little Sisters Bookstore, which covers gay and lesbian materials. And they have stopped a great number of materials coming in right now, including such innocuous stuff as The Joy of Gay Sex, The Joy of Lesbian Sex.
Do those customs officers receive their mandate from the BC Classification Board?
No, they're feds. They're from the federal government, right? So you've got also the Criminal Code of Canada, which has been used, for example, to raid Red Hot Video. Then you've got the provincial censorship in place. So there's different levels that exist, all of which I think right now are very problematic.
Mm-hmm. How does BC compare to other provinces in Canada for its censorship?
That's a good question. To date, and to be fair, the classifications branch has been fairly liberal in their treatment of film materials. Certainly compared to Ontario, which is just absolutely vindictive in terms of artist-made materials, feminist work, gay and lesbian work. I mean, forget those categories there. What we are quite afraid of is, in the extension into video, what's being proposed is different kinds of categories and much more active censorship of materials. I think because the way that it's perceived by the AG is that they're acting on pornography in response to a very vocal lobby group.
What's the best province in Canada, from your point of view, regarding censorship?
I'm really not sure. I know Manitoba's brought in some forms of censorship. In a way, BC has been, because the attitude of the classifications branch has been to classify material and describe it, as opposed to really restrict access a great deal or to censor. But what is being proposed again with video is not that.
Let's take the comparison one step further. How does Canada compare to other countries? I know, for instance, that the Scandinavian countries are far more progressive. How does Canada compare to the rest of the world?
In terms of the United States, there's a certain space for more information and more images to exist without prosecution, because there's such a strong belief in the right to speak, of sort of civil libertarian values in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been an attempt in the United States to bring in, on a city level, what's called the Dworkin-McKinnon Ordinance, which would give people the right to launch civil cases against pornography, and that's been pretty well unsuccessful. The Supreme Court in the U.S. has just ruled that to be not viable. In Britain, there's very strong censorship. It's very similar to Ontario in the kind of attitude of the censor board and the materials being censored.
So Canada is somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle, but getting worse.
What exactly is the game plan for the CRTV now?
We have a number of things we plan to do. One is a series of screenings, which will explore material that has been censored in Ontario and in other places, other countries. It will look at gay and lesbian images. We hope to screen some of the new pornography, and by that I mean primarily work by women and commercial work, because we really don't distinguish between artistic work and commercial work. We don't want to see that written into the legislation.
Has any of this stuff that you'll be screening been classified by BC's classification branch?
No, because it's in the video medium. It won't have been. Right?
So it's not yet. I see.
And if we hold the screenings once the legislation's in place, because we hope to begin them at the end of April, and it may be in place, then we're going to have somewhat of a battle, I would imagine, with them about our right to screen material without classification or censorship. We also have been gathering supporters in the sense of people who are willing to write letters to the Attorney General in Victoria, care of the Parliament buildings, which we encourage you all to do.
Okay, we'll give out that address.
Right. And also people who are willing to speak out at a press conference that we will hold as soon as the legislation is in place. If you're interested in our coalition and joining it in coming to any of our activities, you can phone me. My name's Sarah, and care of the Video Inn. The number is 688-4336. Or write us, and Mike will give you our address.
Okay. Good. Well, Sarah Diamond, thanks very much for coming in, and good luck. On the subject of freedom and censorship, this is Test Department and The Face of Freedom, Part 3.
Music. The rhythm of the mambo is doing its bit.
Briefly, too, I think this, the way the second show, and I think we're going to have a third one, because partly because we're an evolving culture, and we need this kind of forum. We need this kind of forum to come together and see what's coming out of our evolving culture, and we need this kind of forum to examine and explore all kinds of new ideas and horizons that need a spot in which to do it, and only have an occasion over a beer or whatever, and that's not good enough right now.
Okay, so okay then, what is lesbian art?
There've been a number of art shows that there's been erotic art show, and there's been Festival 82, and I think it's been really remarkable that not only haven't that many lesbians been represented. Although there's an assumption that any woman who's an artist is probably a lesbian. It's been remarkable that very few lesbians worked on either of those two shows. This is in BC, I don't know about in other places. But even more indicative is that in terms of the selection of materials that went into those two shows, there was very, very little lesbian content in any, whether it was film or the literary workshops or the visual images. So, you know, that to me once again said that not only are we invisible, but that when we try to be visible and approach shows, our work isn't selected. And our images, for whatever reasons, they're not chosen. So we need to begin to present our own images as we choose them for ourselves.
Okay. Do any of you want to embroider on that? On the idea of what lesbian art is?
I think lesbian art is as we find it. It's what we've seen and what we will see.
But is it art by lesbians? Like, is any piece of work that a lesbian makes lesbian's art?
You know, I don't think so. But this is, again, I don't think any of us... I would doubt if any of us really know how to answer that question yet. I think we're in process, you know, and we probably have different opinions about that. But I don't think so. I think you can have... I was a visual artist for years, and I've been a writer for a long time now. But you can have a lesbian who can paint... landscapes, right? But I don't consider that myself as lesbian art right now. I consider that as art that is being done, happens to be done by a lesbian. But there are certain kinds of images and subject matter that have specifically to do with the lesbian experience, that have nothing to, you know, that don't translate into other experiences. And because of that, they have the potential for all kinds of new visions and sensibilities and form. And right now, it seems a lot of those have to deal with our body. It seems almost like square one as a culture again and as an art form. And a lot of them do come off of our body. But it's seen our bodies in all kinds of new ways. Some of them go beyond that. But I think there you can have a lesbian who can create art that isn't definably lesbian, and it can, she can also create art, and it can be at the same, you know, at the same time. It's just a different piece. Yeah.
So in a sense, what you're saying is that lesbian art is art that is self-consciously lesbian. That where the artist is through the artist making a conscious statement about her identity as a lesbian.
I think we have the phenomenon of lesbian and artist,
yeah.
And then lesbian artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lesbian and artist can deal with any subject matter,
yeah,
at all. At the moment that you want to say lesbian artist, you are somehow or other dealing with that current of energy that has to do with sexuality and sexual identity. And that's what we've attracted to the show, and that's what we've attracted to the reading.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that's the definition that you use, do you think that women who are lesbians who don't create art that falls within that framework stayed away from exhibiting in the show because they were lesbians who were creating art? As opposed to lesbian-identified artists? Do you think that definition in itself was something that women picked up on when they thought about the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a feeling of that kind of response from some women who didn't wish to be lesbian artists, although they were both lesbian and artists.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit more about that response?
It seems like that's a hard one, you know, and I think we're in process about that again, but it seems like that kind of art that you're defining can be shown or read or played, if you're talking about music, in the arenas that already exist. And the kind of art that we've been showing in whether it's visual or whatever in this month-long show doesn't have that arena. It's that simple, I think.
I think that that's apparent in the fact that we all know that there have been lots of lesbian artists in the past, but it's incredibly hard to locate them or identify them by their work because they were not doing lesbian art per se, or most of them weren't doing lesbian art. So I think that we don't have a very strong heritage of lesbian art, but we know that there are lots and lots of lesbians who are working as artists.
Do you think that definition narrows the focus of who your audience is, though? And the ability of the art to speak to a broad range of lesbians? Does it require a feminist consciousness to relate to the kind of art that you're describing?
I think the opposite is true, is once you start to speak about something that hasn't been spoken of, what you do is enormously broaden the whole field. You at once broaden the notion of what art is, and then you also broaden the notion of what society is. And I think that, you know, what we started with last year was some fairly abstract images in a two-week show with a little bit of video and a little bit of performance. And a little bit of poetry, and this year what we've come to is a month-long show that encompasses censorship, eroticism, herstory, literary evening, music evening, a band, artist workshops, all kinds of things. So, you know, from starting from one narrow statement, I am, we've enormously broadened the field, not only for ourselves but everybody around us.
I want to say that the lesbian and artists were part of the audience. They didn't stay away. I think that they were really curious. They just didn't want to put in.
I still want to reiterate, some of those women are the same person. They wouldn't call themselves lesbian artists, but like say in the literary evening, they had lesbian literature. But they would also be the same person who would be lesbian and artist out in the world, and you know, and their work wouldn't be identifiably lesbian always. So we can't say that this is one person or another. Often it's the same person, same woman.
Yeah.
Betsy, I forget which evening this was, but she said, they need our images, you know, their images are bankrupt and stagnant, and we've moved far beyond those images, and they need to hear our words, they need to see our images, they need to listen to our sounds.
It's a really interesting question for me because I do documentary work, mm-hmm. and I know something that Amelia, you know, which does video documentary, has tried to really grapple with is whether we bring a very specific perspective to our work because we're lesbians. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're clear about it, but one thing that we have said is that even in doing documentary, which is not specifically about lesbians, that because we are lesbians, we have a sensitivity to other women and a way of also being outside of the dominant experience of women that gives us a view, you know, a view of from the outside. And also that in documenting their struggles as lesbians, right, and trying to identify ourselves in that process of documentation as lesbians, that we bring to them the kind of knowledge that there are women who are autonomous, who are doing this kind of work that they can relate to, right, who are lesbians, who represent that kind of autonomy. And these are women in parallel kinds of struggles, but they're not struggles around lesbianism. So it seems to me that there's another, like, when I think about it, there's like art that's specifically lesbian content oriented, and then there's art by women who are lesbians who don't want to be identified as lesbians, who want that kind of broader audience. And then there's another area, which is art by lesbians, which somehow has a special perspective to it because the women doing the art are lesbians. So that even if it isn't lesbian subject matter, it's like, if you say I'm a lesbian and I'm producing that, this, like if you make yourself open, if you come out in the process of production, there's another level of art production there. And I'm not sure what it is, and I'm not sure if the show touched on it, but I think it's a really important kind of question that we have to deal with as artists, dealing with a whole range of, you know, images that we create.
If a new color could evolve, I think that we're going through shadings to a new color, because I think that if through the women's movement we'd be able to define ourselves as women, but I think through the lesbian movement what we begin to do is say okay to the other woman, is to go past the stage where the I is the only thing that exists. When we reach the lesbian movement, we say the we exist. So we not only say, from the women's movement, we're able to say, I love my vulva, I love my period. From this art show, we've had women who've written poetry about another woman's menstrual period and making rose petals from it. We have the self-affirmation, but we also have the affirmation of the other, which to me is a real turning point for the position of women in society. It's a whole movement of women together that really does overthrow fundamentally the definition of who a woman is.
Okay. Moving on to the definition of lesbian art, is there a lesbian aesthetic?
Define the word.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I guess what I mean by aesthetic is sets of images, an emotional space that's created by the art, a kind of impact, specific forms that lesbian artists have chosen that's specific to art produced by lesbians who are self-consciously lesbian. Is there something that distinguishes that art from, let's say, art by other women, by dominant artists?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, again, it's very hard to talk about these in a sense this, without actually looking at the art. I find this difficult. Like, I want to show you certain poems, or you know, look at certain photographs or paintings or whatever, and say yes, there it is. You know. But for instance, some of the poetry or the literature in the literary meaning was about women making love, and I mean that could not have been written by. I mean, it was so clearly the images and what happened and the whole ambience of the experience is so clearly between two women, and it couldn't be mistaken for anything else. That's all I can say at the moment. Yeah.
In the literary evening, I found certain things recurring. Certain rhythms and rivers and landscapes and
whales.
It really felt like those rhythms were what was basic to the experience of all the readers.
And there's a reclaiming, I know for me, in terms of words that I had to disregard, such as intercourse, which seemed to me to be an obsolete word in my life experience. And then going back to what that word came from, its etymology, the root of that word means to run between. And so I have reclaimed that word, and that actually is a very meaningful word that I've been able to transform into our experience now.